An adventure is never an adventure when it happens, says Tim Cahill, the American travel writer. An adventure is simply physical and emotional discomfort recollected in tranquility. And so here we are in the very epitome of tranquility, which is an Irish pub in the very centre of London in King's Cross. I'm not going to give the location away completely because it's a favourite pub and I don't want it to get too busy. We're on the very cusp of Christmas. And what can we see in front of us as well? There's a big bar, there's a Christmas tree, there's lots of lights. There's a slightly patterned wallpaper, so I hope I'm painting a bit of a picture for you. And I'm here with Artemis. Hello, Artemis.
Hello.
You'll have heard Artemis. She's been popping up on recordings over the past few months. So what have we got planned today? This is very different. This is our Christmas special. So I wonder if we can capture the sound of clinking pint glasses. There we go. Hopefully that comes through.
Very Christmassy.
Very Christmassy. We thought it'd be really nice. We had the chance to dwell on what is now 1 year of this podcast. Yesterday, this is the 20th of December when we're recording. I think we're 1 year and 1 day old because the first episode was on the 19th of December in 2018. So we want to tell you a little bit more about who we are, talk a bit about the podcast in the future, but also, most importantly, probably reflect on what we've done in the last year.
Yeah, so this is a completely different format to our usual episode. So we're not going to pick a single year and then pick three scenes from that year. So Peter, I thought you could start by telling us a bit about yourself, since he's a bit of an elusive figure on the podcast, but ever present.
Right, so this is a strange experience because I've been asking questions for a year. But okay, let's go with this. I'm a writer, mostly historian. I've written three books over the past 10 years that have generally being on the period of the long 18th century, which historically speaking, I suppose, is, you know, through the time from the Glorious Revolution of the 1690s through to about the time of the end of the Napoleonic Wars. And so I'm really a writer, but the thing that happens when you've got a book that comes out, you do all sorts of little things around it. So you have, I don't know, you'll have an article to write for a newspaper, and occasionally you'll have a piece of audio to do for, I don't know, the BBC or whoever it's going to be. And I've just always enjoyed doing the interviews because I find that when you tell historical stories on the page, they, you know, they're kind of beautifully formed and you can spend ages with your metaphors and getting it precise. But there's a real liveliness to talking about history and doing it, you know, on the airwaves. So that, yeah, that's really a little bit about me. What more do you want to know? I can tell you personal things. I live with my wife and son in West London. I'm from Staffordshire originally, which is a little county right in the middle of England. And
I think that's a good introduction. I wanted to know as well about how you came up with the idea for the podcast and what made you, what kind of sparked that initial moment of inspiration that you decided you wanted to do travels through time?
I suppose it goes back a few years. Where I don't know if there's a moment of pure genesis where I thought, well, this would be a great idea. But incrementally, I had this, I suppose, sense that I wanted to do a podcast. And I've always liked the idea of a format which took you away from a personality-based podcast, more into the realms of something that could be repeated and you could go out there. And obviously, in the UK, our greatest radio programme ever is Desert Island Discs.
Of course.
I don't think anyone would argue with that. It's been voted to be that in many polls. A Desert Island Discs is when you just get someone to talk for half an hour about their favourite songs. And I thought, well, it's a bit of a riff on that theme, really. You can just get people to talk about their favourite year in the past. And if you're going to get people to talk about their favourite year in the past, that could be the album, but what are the singles within the album? Mm. And that could be the scenes. Mm. And three seems to me a good number to cover. So I had this idea, but I didn't really do anything with it for a few years. I was always a bit scared that somebody else might come up with it independently. So I wanted to give it a go. And it was only really last year when I approached History Today magazine and they said, oh, well, we're interested maybe in doing it as a partnership. And I think the first one we recorded was with this wonderful historian called Diane Atkinson. Mm. Okay, I don't know if you've heard this episode. It was very beginning. And it's about the year 1914 and suffragettes. The thing is, you never know if something's going to work until you do it. And I didn't want to be that person who sat around in pubs like this and said, oh, I've got a great idea for a podcast, and it just never happened. I thought, we'll give it a go. And the first one we recorded was with her. And we were just so fortunate because she was a brilliant storyteller. We sat down and we said, where are we going to go? And she was straight off in Preston talking about the suffragette who was being victimised by the system. And then we were in London, and before we knew it, we'd done, I don't know, a 30-minute recording. I suppose Maria's sitting over there. So Maria's the kind of silent person in this scene. She's a producer who does all the hard work. We left, I suppose, quite nervously thinking that we had something interesting. We put it together. I suppose from then it's just become a bit of a repeatable thing, but it's a format, of course. It gives you a structure, but everyone brings something different to it. People approach the format in different ways. So that's the best overview of Travels Through Time I can give, really.
And of course you have the mementos at the end, which are very like Desert Island Discs, like what are they going to bring back to the present, which I always really enjoy that bit.
Yeah, I suppose this is the more conceptual idea of actually being back in the past, because there's two ways you can approach the format. You can look at the format as, well, we're going to sit down and analyse 1 year in the past. So 1066, 1199, 1485, big years, fine, you can do that. I suppose originally I had this idea that we'd do it in a more conceptual way, when we'd actually pick someone up out of the year and they would walk around. And sometimes that happens in the podcast. We get these really immersive moments when people look and see and smell. And the one thing the memento does, though, it does actually make people make that leap from one to another, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And you get that tangible reminder of the episode. I think we're going to talk about some of the mementos later on, so we're going to have a look at them.
And would you say that being transported into the past like that is your favourite part of the interviewing process, or what do you enjoy most when you finish recording an episode with somebody?
I think what I'd say is that I enjoy, most of all, receiving people's choices, because before we go and sit down, wherever we're sitting down, I ask people to make their choices, so I have an idea of how to try and structure the conversation. I think that's always a really exciting moment, just to see, you know, because as we said before with the Desert Island Discs things, that's the moment which is very similar to, you know, just seeing people's musical selections. And so what I like is people bring this to, you know, they come to the recording with an idea of what they want to talk about, and then we go through it. So I think that's quite good fun, because then you almost see the episode on a piece of A4 paper. So that's really exciting. And then you can think, oh, we're going to be talking about the Tower of London, or we're going to be talking about Mark Smeaton's keyboard, or whatever it's going
to
be.
I was going to ask you what your two favourite moments were from the last series or so, because you said that your special interest is in the long 18th century, but I was wondering if there were any episodes you'd done where you'd gone into it thinking, not really my usual subject, not sure if I'm going to enjoy this one, and then left having learned something. And
Oh, loads and loads. I mean, the thing is, I suppose you worry about looking a big fool when you're interviewing these experts who know a period which is completely different to yours, and you've got to start at the beginning. You know, something like Violet Moller's one on the year 529, I didn't know anything about at all, but I really thought that was an interesting point in history when we'd finished with it. Favourite moments, though, I loved Simon Schaffer. Now, Simon Schaffer, for anyone who knows anything about the history of science, will know who he is. He's the professor of the history of science at the University of Cambridge. And we went up there to the Whipple Library, which is, you know, among all the colleges, it's where he runs his little kingdom, if you like, in that department of the history of science. And he was on such wonderful form and gave us this tour through the year 1684, I think, which is basically the genesis of Newton's Principia Mathematica.
1684, looked at from many points of view, is a rather unlikely year to choose, because it was so extraordinarily unpleasant. Where I want to go in 1684 is London, and then Cambridge, and then London again. First of all, 1684, the winter of 1684, was the coldest winter this country has ever experienced.
I think what we have there is a really great historian from today giving us history of an important moment.
Yeah.
And you get these characters like Newton and Halley.
And Wren.
And Wren, exactly. So you know this one.
It's one of my favourites as well.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly.
Yeah, he's got a great voice, isn't he?
He's got a great voice, wonderful storyteller. And I think on that day we just caught him at a good time, but with the best subject of all, which is one of the biggest of all, you know, how the planets work.
So, it seems so minor as well, but one of the things that I really love about that episode is how he evokes the weather in London at the particular point in the year. He starts by talking about how cold it was, the Thames had frosted over, and the whole thing. He really does such a good job of taking you right there.
So I think I've been scrutinised enough here. I like asking the questions. I'm going to ask you a bit about yourself, Artemis. Tell us who you are. You turned up. You started appearing on recordings in about September time.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
So I'm in my last year studying history at Durham University, which is actually how that was the first sort of bonding moment that we had, I guess, because I emailed you saying I love the podcast and I'd love to find out more about how it happens and how it, you know, how you create it. And Peter was at Durham as well, so we bonded over that. What else to say about myself? I'm also from London, and yeah,
that's fine.
That's fine.
No, I'm not going to scrutinise you too.
No.
How do you think? This is one question I had for you, and I thought it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on. How do you think? Because you're a student of history at the moment in the academy, how do you think that podcasts are changing the way that we think about the past? Are they doing anything different to what we've been doing before?
Well, I think that podcasts generally are a really interesting way of talking through ideas and communicating ideas because they're so accessible. You know, just the, I think listening to people talk and processing ideas through listening to people talk about them is most ancient form of communicating ideas. You know, oral history is obviously the oldest form of history that we have, and podcasting is like a modern reincarnation of that. So I think it's really well suited because it's all about storytelling, and that works best when you hear it through the human voice. And also just the fact that you can slot it into any part of your day as well. So you can be on the tube and suddenly you're in 529 listening to Violet talk about Justinian or wherever you are. So I think that's what works so well about podcasts.
Okay. What are the big themes for you in history at the moment? Is there anything in particular that excites you about the work that historians are doing?
So me personally, I'm really interested in history of sex and gender and sexuality, and that's what my dissertation research has been about. But I find that particular facet of history really compelling because I think it raises such interesting questions about how we define those things today and, you know, things that we think of as being objectively true or biologically just fact are completely overturned when we look at how people defined sex, for example, in the 17th century. Mm. Those for me are like the really big questions and really get into the heart of a historical period is when you start asking people about, when you start thinking about people's sex lives or how people thought about their bodies. It's so personal.
Yeah, sure. Would you have a dream interviewee then if you would sit down, having sketched out those interests? Anyone that you would love to sit down and talk to about a year in the past?
Oh, it's so hard to pick, but I think I'd have to say, I was just saying to you that I've been reading the diaries of Anne Lister recently, and she was a kind of Yorkshire gentlewoman living at the beginning of the 19th century, and she kept these amazing diaries, and she was a lesbian. And the thing that is so interesting about her diaries is that she is very forthright about her sexuality. She says, "I love and only love the fairer sex," and she is very explicitly repulsed by the idea of men trying to marry her and tries to have marriages with women that she's in love with. And there's no sense of, even though she lives in a society in which this is just not even, it's not even illegal because it doesn't exist. You know, for men it was illegal to be gay, but for women it's like it doesn't even exist enough to become illegal. So I would have loved to interview her and ask her about what that's like.
Well, okay, so you're going to be doing some interviewing from us from now onwards. This is our first bit of news. Quite exciting. I think the first episode that you hear in the new year is going to be with you in the control seat, so to speak, which brings me perfectly to the question of, what are your favourite moments? Do you have any particular? Let's pick a couple.
My favourite moments are, well, I think I have to give a shout out to the Violet Moller episode because I agree that was excellent. And I'm a big fan of medieval history, so I knew a tiny amount about the period she was talking about, but it was just, she brought it to life in a completely new way for me and spoke about it so wonderfully. And the moment that I enjoyed in particular was when she was talking about the relationship between Justinian and Theodora, and she was saying that human nature is universal and how intellectual history can sometimes seem a bit dry, but suddenly when you're presented with a story like the story between those two or the kind of human aspect, it really comes to life.
I think another very interesting thing you briefly touched on is that he was married to the Empress Theodora. And I mean, that story is really, you know, incredibly romantic, wonderful story. They fell in love. She was the daughter of a circus trainer. And this was before Justinian had become emperor. And he persuaded his uncle, so the story goes, to change the law. Because by this stage, he, although he was born a peasant, he counted as a member of the elite. And there was a law saying that if you were part of the elite, you couldn't marry a low-born person. And so he had the law changed so that he could marry Theodora. And they were just this incredible couple who both came from very, very low down in society, but who were there ruling. And, she, you know, she had a lot of influence over him. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like they were a modern couple, but I mean, compared to, I think, a lot of male-female relationships in that period, you know, she was really played a really important role. And I think that's such an interesting aspect of him.
Well, that's good for a first choice. What else has interested you?
As a historian who's interested in women's history and gender history, I also really enjoyed the episode with Dr. Patricia Farah, as she spoke about women's involvement in the First World War. And I think that was really interesting because it just showed how a period that we tend to think of as being very male-dominated, wars are obviously fought by men in the most part. And she kind of took a completely different spin on it and showed how there were lots of different actors and women actors around playing really important parts. It wasn't just about being in the cabinet or in the trenches.
During the war, in Imperial College in London, there was an experimental trench dug in the garden, and there was an 8-woman team down there. The woman in charge was called Martha Whiteley. She tested mustard gas and she developed an explosive, and the explosive was codenamed DW for Dr. Whiteley. So yes, women were doing all sorts of things like that.
There's some incredible stories there, aren't there? Okay, we'll give you one more, but if you had to pick one more.
I think my favourite one, and this was the one that I listened to before I started working on the podcast with you and thought, yeah, this is something I really want to be involved in, was the episode with Anshar Mahotra. And she spoke about Indian partition in 1947, and she describes herself as an oral historian, which I think is so evident in the recording because she was such an amazing storyteller. And she also spoke about how she tries really hard in her research to move away from a history of that's written by victors and using the style of history that she does to get to the kind of forgotten voices and the people who are left behind. And I thought that was really powerful.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because this is one of the things I think about constantly, is that we are taught and we read this very large capital H history, right? History of laws, history of rules, history of the past, history that is written by an obvious victor. And what I'm trying to do in my work and my book and my research is to record these small H histories, histories of people. And those are often, I don't enjoy the term, but it's called a subaltern history. It's called history from beneath. But really, this is the history that people make. Right, people's history. How does one decision taken by, yes, a group of men sitting in a room affect a population as vast as that of India?
I absolutely agree with that. That was in March. We recorded, remember it well, actually, we recorded down on Vauxhall Bridge Road at Random House, and she came with great recommendations, wonderfully reviewed book. It's been doing superbly well in India. But for me, the thing about Anshul's one, which was, you know, in herself, she's an incredibly impressive person. Mm-hmm. She is very, very eloquent, brilliant storyteller, fabulous writer, if you can read her book as well. But she's engaged with something that I think people at the moment are really interested in, which is this idea of material history and how it will unlock memory. Mm-hmm. This is a really big theme, I think, at the moment. And she has found a way of writing about that which has taken her back to this moment of partition. And I suppose the one thing that kind of I changed my mind about after talking to Anshul was this idea that sometimes I used to believe that it was quite necessary not to talk about traumatic events in the past, because that was part of the process of healing, if you see what I mean. We can't go around talking about, say, the Holocaust or partition or whatever, because it's going to be divisive. But her argument was, yes, that's true, but only for a certain length of time, because if you don't talk about these things, they just solidify into prejudice. And I think she described that really, really well. And there's a few sections, actually, in that podcast where she's incredibly, incredibly powerful in her use of language and describing things. So hopefully we'll be able to fish out some audio from Anshul's one as well. So that's pretty good. Well, I think we've whizzed through quite a lot of stuff there. Pretty cool roundup of a stimulating year. I tell you what, let's do this thing now where we pull out a few. Do you want to pull out a few of our mementos? We've got here as a a prop, a Foster's pint glass filled with various mementos, and hopefully they'll just trigger a few of our own memories of episodes over the years. So which is the first one you've got?
I've just pulled out one that says, a specially adapted harness used by suffragettes to frustrate the police.
Oh, okay. That's easy, because this is 1914, Dr. Diane Atkinson, and she was talking about this. So she's brought this back to her home in Shoreditch, and basically suffragettes were causing trouble from, depending on what perspective you look at, their whole thing was about buying time from the police. So if they had this harness, they could hook themselves up with it and buy themselves half an hour or so before they had to be sawn free. So Diane Atkinson wanted one of these as a great testimony to the struggle. So that's good. Should we try another one?
Yes.
What's next? These are all coming out of our time machine, we can imagine.
This one says, a crate of books saved from the Neoplatonic Academy.
Well, I think you know that's Violet Moller. So yeah. It's 529, the moment when lots of knowledge was lost when the Neoplatonic Academy in Greece was closed down.
It's was this the episode. Crate of books that was on the ship that she was describing?
Absolutely, yeah. So so she's got her crate of books. I'm going to pick one out myself now, actually. I have to say, a Foster's pint glass isn't the thing, but it's quite tall, and you've really got to dig your hands in. Okay, what's this one? A book from Saladin's poetry collection. Well, Saladin takes us back to Jonathan Phillips, who was talking about the Battle of Hattin, which is, I think, 1187. Do a couple more of these before we go on, but basically we're just using them as a guide into episodes that you might want to go and explore if you get the time. So that one.
This one says, the tavern sign for the Pilgrims of the Ocean.
Right, well, that is Sir Michael Palin, and our very, very first published one. So this is a year ago now, and he was talking about exploration in the Arctic, and there was a moment when, I think it was on New Year's Day or something like this, when they crafted an entire pub in the ice, which is, of course, what British people do whenever they go to the far end of the world. They made a pub, and the pub was called the Pilgrims of the Ocean, and he wanted to have the tavern sign swinging in his back garden.
That's a really cool one.
It's a very cool one.
I'd bring the pub sign, Pilgrims of the Ocean. Okay. I would just love to have that.
And that would be
just
hanging in the Palin office.
Oh, yes, put in my garden. On a cold day, I'd go and sit out there and carve an 8-foot wall.
And last one, you can pick it out.
One of Mir Kazim's treasure chests abandoned on the fields of Buxar.
This is William Dalrymple. On the year 1764. He was talking about the East India Company and how this tiny company run from a small office in the east of London managed to transform into a corporate giant which was controlling 200 million people in India. So yeah, I think this has been a pretty cool roundup of what I think has been an interesting first year. I hope this has been a pretty cool roundup of a stimulating year. Bit of news from us. We are pretty much going to double our content by going once a week instead of once a fortnight. So that means a bigger range of voices and hopefully a bigger range of history too. So that's what's coming up in the very short term. What else have I got to tell you about? Okay, yeah, here's a good one. You're going to be also doing some presenting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually very exciting. We're going to be joined by Violet Moller as well. So you've been listening to me and Artemis today. So we're both going to be presenting over the next few months. And we're going to be joined by Violet Moller too. She's really good on the year 529, as we know already. But maybe she's going to be really good on lots of other years too. So listen out for her. She'll be, I think, giving her first episode in January at some point. Just need to subscribe to the feed and you'll hear the first news about that. We've got a website too, which is tttpodcast.com. If you've got any suggestions for guests, if you've got any comments about what we've been doing, do send us an email, which you can get in touch through our site, or a comment beneath our feed would be really nice. But I don't think we've got anything else really to say apart from Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
Not here. The white north has thy bones. Thou, heroic sailor soul, art passing on thy happier voyage there, towards no earthly pole.